Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjublilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM 103.7. I'm Patricia Camilleri, and in this series we shall be hearing from academics about their research and from students and other members of the campus community about the many activities which will be taking place during the coming year. I'm delighted to have with me today Professor Ernest Kakia. Just a little bit about the background of my guest. He's Dean of the Faculty of Information and Communication Technology and Head of Computer Information Systems here at the University of Malta. He holds Bachelor, Master and Doctorate degrees in Computing, Computer Engineering and Software Engineering from the National Technical University of Ukraine and the University of Sheffield in England. Professor Kakia has worked in various electronics and ICT companies and private educational establishments before taking up a lecturing post here at the University of Malta, where he has been since 1994. Professor Kakia is responsible for the software engineering stream in both undergraduate and postgraduate levels in the current BSc Honours ICT degree program here at the university. He has a track record of participating in many local and EU projects, some of which we shall be talking about in depth in this interview today. Professor Kakia was the project leader of a multi-million euro project to construct and equip the new Faculty of ICT building, which is all ready now and shining and looking very beautiful. He was a founding member of the Malta eSkills Alliance and formed part of the managing committee of the EU Cost Action Web Data Net, and forms part of the managing committee of the EU Cost Computational Social Choice, and has been appointed member of the board of editors of the annual peer review journal of the National Technical University of Ukraine. He sits on the editorial board also of QuickPM. Professor Kakia currently holds positions in various university, government and industrial boards. He's chairman of our own Institute of Aerospace Technologies and was a nominee for the Award of Worker of the Year in 2011. And it certainly sounds as though you are a very busy man. First of all, welcome, Professor Kakia, to the program. Today we're these are three big projects, but we're going to limit ourselves to talking about three particular projects because obviously you have been involved in many others over the years. First of all, what drives you to join EU projects in general?
Yes, that's a very interesting question and a question that's asked by many usually.
Because they're very time-consuming.
They are very time-consuming and sometimes one must say not as rewarding as one would expect them to be. In fact, from a financial point of view, probably they are not rewarding at all. But it's very important to keep a project profile for academics at the University of Malta, I think, because it makes you meet different people with different frames of mind, different ways of thinking, cultural backgrounds are different. So you learn, you get to use people like a punching bag also, so you bounce ideas off people, not the same people who work with you who might have the same ideas, some of whom maybe are also your ex-students. So you want to go out, you want to look at what other people's have to offer. You want also to be able to, let's be honest, you'd like to show off a little bit of what you can do with others too. And I must say that everywhere where Maltese people have been involved, as far as I know, all my friends have always had, you know, how shall I put it, raving reviews as far as their participation goes. Their contribution is usually sterling. They managed to do in a short while maybe what others might do in a longer period. Their insight is quite cutting. And due to the fact that we Maltese live in a society which is small but yet multicultural, cross-section-wise, encompasses everything that you'd find in a bigger one, we tend to already have an idea of how to switch between one thing and the other, one view and the other, much, much quicker than people who usually tend to live in a community, in a bigger, in a country that's very big, in a community that is very limited. We tend to live in a country that's very small, but the community itself is very large, if you know what I mean. So that's a very important issue. And I think the profile of the university will benefit also, always benefits from people being in projects.
Yes, I have a lot of people who come on this program and are interviewed and about the projects, and I think that they all feel this same way, that Malta really should be there and has a lot to offer. And perhaps later on in the program we can talk a little bit more about what you get out of it personally. But let's go into the first of the EU projects which we're going to talk about today, which is Praxis. Perhaps you could tell us who the partners are, what the main aims are of this project.
Well, I can't list all the partners because I believe there are like something like 42 or 49 because they tend to increase as the project goes along according to the needs of the project.
And these are separate universities
from around
Europe.
Universities, but they're not only universities. They could be universities. They could also be industrial partners. Right, because, for example, if you have to create a website and then you have got to market it, universities usually are not good at the commercial side of doing things, so you would need probably to have a partner who can commercialize what you are doing. So projects usually tend to be a mix. Well, not all projects, but this particular one, yes. Praxis is a project which addresses something which I think is very important and something which I think sometimes is lacking within our university, and this is the integration of internship into curricula. Internship provides that bit of practical aspect to the work that's done at university. So a student who has done a course in X would benefit a lot if he could spend some time working in X and not only studying X. Obviously, you need an infrastructure for this. For example, here in Malta, we do not have an infrastructure that would cater for internships, and students usually tend to find work during the summer out of their own free will. We help them from a faculty point of view. We help them because we have partners in industry, but it is something that sort of is ad hoc. It isn't something that is a structured thing that you can apply for funds or apply to. So this project wants to create that, but not only for Malta, but for Europe as a whole. So Praxis is a project which creates a portal and structures behind it to allow students to go online, find out which are the companies out there which are ready to offer internships, get an idea of what the internship is going to be all about, match it to the studies that they are doing, and then apply and get accreditation for that internship work that they will be doing. And again, you've got to align all of this with all the partners, the various universities. Some universities already have an internship program, hence they've got accreditation for work done as part of an internship, so it becomes part of the curriculum, as it were. Others, like us, don't have that mechanism, so we have to see how we, you know, try to wriggle around that and try to be part of that, and try to maybe influence ourselves also to try to get this idea of internship into the University of Malta also. Now, I'm talking about from the point of view of the Faculty of ICT. I'm pretty sure, having said that, there are other faculties in the University of Malta which might already have or must have, like education, for example, must have internship as part of the curriculum. But in the Faculty of ICT, this is not yet the case.
Usually what happens, I think, as far as jobs are concerned with our own students, I know a little bit about the ICT faculty and a little about the engineering faculty, that in your final year projects, you tend to get your students involved in problem solving for a particular company.
Yeah.
And very often that company, if the student does the work properly, is very keen to take that student on.
Yes, our engineering students as well.
Sometimes your students can get poached, or they try and get poached before they even leave the course. So these internships for our students perhaps would be of limited interest. I'm being devil's advocate here.
No, I think they'd be of more interest, because if a person is looking to be poached, okay, then I would rather have a greater audience trying to poach me than a smaller audience trying to poach me. If the opportunities are Europe-wide, I'd rather have that than opportunities local only on the island, which might be of a limited nature. But what you said is true, but it's even worse than that, because I can tell you that some of our students are actually, let's not use the word poach, but are usually temporarily employed or let's say have
shown... That's a nice euphemism.
Have interest being expressed towards them from the first year, not from the third year. From the first year that they are in the course. But that is something typical of ICT because, as you probably know, there's a demand, a huge demand, which is not really being catered for by all the educational establishments, including the University of Malta on the island. That means there's more need for ICT specialists than there are specialists being pumped out, taken collectively by the University of Malta and all the other educational establishments, MCAST and everyone else out there. So obviously there is a a thirst for this.
But this, as you say, it's a Europe-wide internship
program.
Portal.
Yeah, it's a portal with structures, with programs, with students being able to go online and actually talk beforehand, communicate beforehand with companies or establishments wishing to offer these internships, so they can get a good idea of what they're going into before they go into it. So there's, and again, this is not a project that sprung out of nowhere. There were many smaller projects before all around Europe which tried to handle or tried to address the problem of internship, but it was never a concerted effort. This is the first Europe-wide concerted effort to try to offer internships, and I happen to know, at least I saw it in some statistics a couple of weeks ago or maybe 3 weeks ago, that in practice the applications, when they looked at who's applying for what and they ranked who applied for most, believe it or not, Malta was the second post. So we had a lot of applicants from Malta who used Praxis to look for internships and to took up internships through the portal.
Well, it's good to know, because obviously experience abroad would be key to somebody in your particular field.
Of course,
field.
Yes, yes.
I think talking in general, again, perhaps ICT doesn't fit into this picture, but there has been some criticism about internships in general in Europe and even in the US. Companies sometimes have been accused of, shall we say, perhaps using and abusing the internship system for getting good people and then not obviously having to pay them perhaps more than so much.
Exploiting them, maybe
and
not
maybe
in the right
exploiting
way.
Exploiting them. Uh-huh. And I think that the students are ready to go from one internship to the other and then perhaps sometimes not actually finding that particular job. But as I say, perhaps in ICT this isn't quite the scenario.
I think it's a scenario that can happen anywhere, including in ICT, and I think it cuts both ways, actually. You can have companies who abuse, for want of a better word, I like to think of
exploit
it as...
Exploit a little bit.
Maybe I'd like to think of it as a meeker way also, maybe companies not well-structured, not well-prepared to accept internees. But it can cut the other way too. You can have internees, you can have students who do not wish to get into heavy work, who wish to get the credit, so they would say, let's find that company that allows me to make tea in the morning for the employees, but then at the end would write a sterling report that I've done this and I've done that and everyone's happy and I get my credits and company's happy and all of that, you know. So it works both ways. So again, this project is an attempt to try to eradicate all of that so that people are prepared beforehand, they know what they're going into, they can even nearly have a contractual document that you will be taken on and you'll be asked to do this task and this task and this class. So before you go, you already know what you're going to do. And it helps the universities who give accreditation for internships to know beforehand that, yes, if you do these tasks, then we can accredit you, give you these so many credits, it will be equivalent to as if you have done work at the university. Right? So this is, again, what you're saying is very true, and this is a way to try to eradicate.
I remember
that.
Speaking to the CEO of a very well-known company here in Malta, who told me, I always like to pay my interns, it might not be a full salary, but I always like to pay them because everybody feels a little bit more
responsible
if right. They're getting some money for it. They're happier, I'm happier, and I like to work it like that.
Yes, yes, that is actually true. And there is also the other thing that we have in Malta that maybe other countries do not have, or maybe they do have, is the award scheme. Because many of our students, during the final year exhibition in the faculty of ICT, we get a number of representatives from industry coming over, looking at the projects. And they will then award a prize. And the prize usually is there's a financial prize or a travel prize or a device or, you know, a tablet or a credit card with some money on it. There's that. But there's also then the offer of coming to work for us for a year, for example. Let's see what you're worth. We'll give you a chance. So it's a form of post-course internship, as it were. So that does exist here. But again, it's very much at the whim of every company, ICT company, to do or not do this in tandem with the faculty of ICT. But luckily, of late, we've been getting a lot of interest and a lot of our students being taken up by this.
All different ways of really getting our students to move on. Yeah. Certainly, I looked on the Praxis website and it's very student-oriented it's got some very good testimonials and I think it's definitely attractive.
And then it's got two aspects. There's the student aspect and there is the industrial aspect, because it's a portal that can be used by industry to put up what they are offering also. So there are two ways in which you can get into the site. Either as a student, as a person who's looking for internships, or the person who's offering the internship.
I think it sounds like a very good idea, and I hope that although the project has ended, I hope that it will be self-sustaining.
It is in a way project, self-sustaining.
And will keep going. And of course, there are options, I suppose, that it can be picked up by other people and developed in different ways. I mean, these could be a starting point.
I'm pretty sure that there are many ideas that can be got out of this for other projects in the future.
Well, as time runs on, perhaps we should speak about your second EU project, which is SALEE. Mm-hmm. The acronym is actually S-A-L-E-I-E, but you have informed me that
that's how we pronounce it,
SALEE. So what exactly are the aims of this particular project?
This particular project is all about alignment, which is another, again, let's say, hot topic in the EU at the moment. As many of our listeners probably know, the EU has grown with member states now coming even from the east, which leads us, well, it's a very good thing because you get a number of, you know, people for different frames of mind, different educational structures coming in, which enhances the milieu as usual. But it also introduces a number of problems vis-a-vis alignment of the curricula. Remember that if you become a member of the EU, then you start to expect exchange of students and of staff. Now, if the curricula of one university, of set of universities, is not aligned with the curricula and cultural expectations of another set of universities, then that exchange becomes a bit messy, tricky, risky, call it whatever you want, but not so beneficial. And it can even give rise sometimes to hard feelings and misunderstandings. So this project was created to try to align as much as possible the curricula in engineering and information technology that exist basically in three parts of the EU: the Eastern philosophies, the mid-European philosophies, you know, French, the German one and all of that, and what we like to refer to as the Anglo-Saxon philosophies, that's England and Ireland and us, basically. And you'd be amazed how different people think and what expectations they have. And when we talk about the alignment of curricula here, we're talking about the curricula mostly at postgraduate level, so at master's and at doctoral levels also. But there is a lot which is also being done at undergraduate level. It trickles down in a way. So the number of partners here is not as large as the Praxis one, but there are quite a few partners, and there's a good sprinkling from all these areas that I mentioned earlier, the three areas within the EU. And it is a project which tries to come up with a set of guidelines. Again, you cannot be too prescriptive, because then it will scare people away more than attract people. A set of guidelines so that if a university wishes to create a new course in engineering or in IT, then there is a document and there are a set of rules and there are structures and glossaries and everything else. There's a whole structure which they can refer to be able to say, listen, I'm building a course that will then be usable in exchanges and can then be useful and congruent and understandable by other people in the EU, and not only by my country, by Romania or Bulgaria only, or Malta only, right? Obviously, the synergy we have with the universities in the UK, like University of York, just part of this project, and with some universities from Ireland, is much closer. We speak the same basic language over there. But you start to see the huge differences and the huge even conceptual expectancies that people have. You know, what are you saying? This doesn't make any sense. When you look at other universities, even not too far flung as the Far Eastern universities, but even, you know, look at the German universities, look at the University of Luxembourg and other places, where what they take for granted, we would say, oh no, we would never do that.
I can imagine that you need a bit of a PhD in diplomacy for approaching meetings.
Yes, also. But what happens is that because the partners become friends also, so maybe some transgressions and some outbursts tend to be, you know, forgotten because it's amongst friends, as it were. If I had to go to an international forum of people who I do not know, then yes, that might be, I would have to be very careful what I say and what I do. But here it's different.
I think the idea of the glossary is a very important one, because sometimes misunderstandings are semantic misunderstandings at a fairly simple level without even going into structures of curricula.
Of course, structures of curricula become even more headed. But just to give you a very brief example of what happened in practice, I mean, at one point people were speaking about a diploma and saying that to reach a diploma, you've got to do this and then you've got to do that and so on and so forth. And we spent, I think it was the best part of half a day arguing, and just to find out that what they meant by a diploma was different than what we mean by diploma, because for here in Malta, diploma is something that you get before you get a degree. It's like you get a certificate, you get a diploma, you get a higher diploma, and then above that there is a degree. Well, in most universities in the East, a diploma is a degree. So we were arguing about where they were. We were saying the same thing, but not knowing that we were saying the same thing and arguing. These are the problems.
And I can imagine that some of the Eastern European universities that have very long traditions in scientific subjects and mathematics, which would obviously involve IT, I can imagine they would not take very kindly contemplating changes.
Yes, that is the other thing in these kind of projects. You see, sometimes the EU requires you to come up with best practice. Now, in this project, for example, in Salie, the first thing that I said is I propose to abolish the term best practice, because it's got the word best in it. And that means you're comparing. So if we say, if the best practice, then after all the discussion happens to be the Anglo-Saxon one, or not, whichever one it is, then by default you're saying, we're doing it better than you are, because ours is best. Right? So best practice might not be, we would rather go for the word different, or difference in practice, right? Or possibilities of outcome. There are a number of more diplomatic words that one can use for this case.
Well, here we're at semantics again, you know, it's really important to get the right word. The last subject, the last project we're going to talk about today is called FETCH. It's an ETN.
Automatic Network Project.
Network.
Yes.
You've worked on a couple of similar ones before this one.
Two others, to be precise, yes.
And have they followed on from each other?
Definitely, yes, they have followed on from each other. All of them had got very good reviews from the EU after they were evaluated, because remember, every single project gets evaluated from the EU in a very objective way, a very strict way, because after all, they've got to make sure that the money that's being spent is being used in the proper way. FETCH was, well, not the ETN. The two others, one, the first one was DEC, the other one was TRICE, and this one is FETCH, all got sterling reviews, the highest.
And they were very briefly aimed at what?
All of them were aimed at trying to improve the way computer education is supplied, put it this way, from the way a curriculum is built all the way up to the way you deliver stuff in a classroom, and the kind of resources that you have to have, and the things you've got to watch out for, and the expectancies from a cultural point of view that might be acceptable in one country and not acceptable in another. So you can see some sort of tie between the Salie objectives and the FETCH objectives. The FETCH objectives are more on the e-learning technology support and the best way to get the concepts that you wish to teach into the head of the student. The Salie one is more focused on the curriculum and the alignment of the curriculum. So there is a distinction, but they are yet linked one or the other, because you cannot have a curriculum alignment without having a good idea of how to deliver all the subject itself, the subject matter. FETCH, again, is one of those projects where, if it is to work well, then it's important to have a large amount of partners in it, as many as possible from all around the EU. Why? Because we all do things in different ways. So if you're going to come up with a modus operandi, or you're going to present the EU with a picture of what's happening currently within the European Union, then you have got to have information coming in from as many sources as possible, as diverse as possible. And I believe this project also has something like 49 partners or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty large.
What about the divisions, if we can call them that, within this ways of teaching or methodologies? Before, you were talking about with Saley, there was a sort of East, Middle, Anglo-Saxon divide. Did you find that the methodologies followed that same pattern or not?
Not really. If anything, there would be an inverse, because remember, Eastern universities are, for want of a better word, coming strongly online just now, after the fall of the Iron Curtain and everything else. So it's always easier when your house is completely destroyed, and I'm not saying that the house was completely destroyed, but from a point of view of, you know, having a lot of problems, you tend to say, okay, sweep everything away, let me start from scratch. And when you start from scratch, you usually tend to go for the best practices available at the moment. Mm.
So, you don't have the burden of legacy.
Exactly. Well, in other universities, especially ours and Anglo-Saxon ones, you know, we are buried in tradition, as it were, which, again, I'm not saying is bad, but has its pros and its cons also. So there's a bit of an inverse here, but more, the distinction here is more between universities that are state-run and universities that are privately run. State-run universities are usually cash-strapped. It's not easy for them to change. Well, we know this very well, right? Not very easy for them to implement new ideas on the fly, whereas private universities have got a board and they just take a decision and something can be actually changed and done and implemented literally overnight. So new uptake of new courses, new technologies, new ways of teaching, new curricula, that can be done very, very fast in a private university, but not so fast in a state-run university. So the distinction, rather than across the parts of the EU, is now across the levels of the universities in the EU.
But in a subject like yours, in a field like yours, information communication technology, one would have thought that there would be a desire to be using the latest methodologies. It's a field that would lend itself, perhaps, to the latest methodologies. Or is that not the case?
Again, ICT is quite large as a field, so it depends where in ICT you are working. If you're working on the, let's say, the front end of ICT, which is what most people tend to see, that is, you know, you're working on the technologies that are available, the devices that you use, you're working on the latest web applications, the social media hype that's all coming out, then yes, to teach that, you'd need to have a lot of cutting-edge stuff you yourself, or else it's going to be just pie in the sky. But if you're working on the more fundamental issues, which would border on mathematics, computation, computer science, and all of this, then that might not always be what you need. And desire doesn't always match possibilities.
And with that, I'm afraid we've come to the end of our time. I'd like to thank Professor Ernest Kakia for coming to talk to us about these three fascinating projects.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye. Il-programm li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġju plilkom bix-xoqgħa tajba ta' Farsens Foundation.